he's in a position where the Fed and the U.S. government and their policies have, in effect, jumped off the top of a 100-story skyscraper 100 years ago, and we're about to hit the ground. Well, money, let's say M0, if you would, base money, is really gold. It's a medium of exchange. It's a store of value. And a lot of what passes for money today would dry up and blow away. That is accurate to see it as a bear market in the dollar as opposed to a bull market in gold, because gold is money. The dollar is just a currency, which is a government's substitute for money. So that's an accurate, very accurate way of seeing things.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's just Steve Yang with Natural Resource Stocks, where we mine for stories that matter. And today I'm joined by veteran contrarian thinker Doug Casey, someone who doesn't just react to headlines, but asks deeper questions and speaks his mind, which I appreciate. Doug, I respect him because he's a well-respected thinker, and it gives me what he really thinks. And Doug, it's great to have you back on the show.
Thanks, Steve. Right now, perhaps the last time I talked to you as well, but I'm on the farm in Uruguay, and I'll be here for the next few months.
Okay. Yeah, so you've been out of the States for a bit, and last time I found that very insightful and frankly hilarious, and so it was great to get you back on the show here. A lot has happened since then, and you know, let's start with the nomination for the Fed chair, the Warsh nomination after Trump announced who he wanted. The gold and silver sold off briefly and then seemed to resume their upward move. And I'm mostly interested in the psychology underneath the markets rather than the price and anything else. But overall, there appears to be a fading confidence in central banks and a growing sense that the current monetary system isn't working. And are we starting to see that the system break right now? I mean, how close do you think we are to a meaningful shift here?
I think we're pretty close. And as far as the new Fed chairman is concerned, as you know, I believe that the Fed really serves no useful purpose. It's really just an engine of inflation, and it should be abolished. And as far as Mr. Warsh is concerned, he seems like a bright and knowledgeable guy, but all these Fed people are, I mean, frankly, but none of them can do anything. I mean, look, at this point, they're in a situation where, he's not able to fine tune the economy. In fact, that's a phrase that they used to use, but they don't dare to use it anymore because it seems so ridiculous, and it is. He's in a position where the Fed and the U.S. government and their policies have, in effect, jumped off the top of a 100-story skyscraper 100 years ago, and we're about to hit the ground. So it doesn't matter how smart he is. He can't pull a rabbit out of the hat. So, no, it's... Look, it's something for the talking heads to talk about, but it's to me, it's unimportant.
Doug, I spoke with Michael Cooper last week, and he mentioned it's possible that we might not have a Federal Reserve in just a year or two. And I've never myself lived without the Fed, so it's hard for me to picture. How fast could a change like that happen? And what does life look like on the other side?
Well, look, if the Fed was abolished, as I advocate, what would money be? What would people use for money? Because the dollar itself is an unbacked fiat currency. It's nothing but paper that can be created at will and is being created at the rate of a couple trillion new dollars, new currency units per year right now. So if the Fed was abolished, what would things look like? Well, money, let's say M0, if you would, base money, is really gold. It's a medium of exchange. It's a store of value. And a lot of what passes for money today would dry up and blow away. So it would be problematical for people that live in the paper world. But the good news is that all the real wealth in the world, the fields, the factories, the knowledge in people's heads, the skills in their hands, they wouldn't vanish. Property would still exist. So life would go on. If that was to happen, though, the price of gold, I suspect, would have to be readjusted in current terms to many, many thousands of dollars per ounce. So I remain long gold, despite the fact that gold is overpriced by traditional parameters. Cost of a meal, cost of a house, cost of a car, that type of thing. Gold is overpriced right now, but I think we're in a new paradigm where what we have to do is look at the price of gold in terms of how many dollars, how many ounces of gold would it take to redeem the money supply? In other words, to make each dollar redeemable with a specific amount of gold, it would have to be much higher. Well, I continue to be long gold. I'm not worried about this little blip in the bull market that occurred a few days ago.
So speaking of paradigm shifts, I spoke with Keith Weiner, and he has an interesting way to look at things. He says that I see this as a bear market for the price of the dollar rather than a bull market for the price of gold. What are your thoughts on that? And do you see the end of fiat coming down altogether? And how imminent are we talking about here?
That is accurate to see it as a bear market in the dollar as opposed to a bull market in gold, because gold is money. The dollar is just a currency, which is a government's substitute for money. So that's an accurate, very accurate way of seeing things. I can't tell when something is going to happen. As you recall, I've been predicting what I call the Greater Depression for years. Timing is uncertain, but it's inevitable. The general standard of living of most people is going to take a drop. Why? Because we've been living on credit, borrowing from what people, what previous generations have saved, and mortgaging our own futures. That's what all the debt is about on both sides of the scale. Mm-hmm. So, I expect a major upset, but how it comes down is hard to predict. So all you can do is diversify prudently and rig for heavy weather. That's really all you can do. There's no certainty. We're in a very unstable situation. We're likely to be looking at a chaotic situation. So it's very hard to make a prediction beyond chaos, which is... You know, which is a pretty general prediction, I admit.
Yeah, so I want you to expand on maybe what that chaos may or may not look like just a little bit. I mean, in terms of who's running things, you know, we're seeing a lot of strain on you know, major international institutions, including the UN, IMF, World Bank. I mean, is this, I'm wondering if it's, this is just normal bureaucratic mess, or if this is, you know, the whole post-World War II system falling apart. But if these institutions were to fall apart, you know, what steps in? Is it chaos, decentralization? Is it authoritarianism? I mean, you know, Trump labeled himself as the dictator. So curious as to know what that system looks like a little bit more.
Well, first of all, almost all of the governments of the world are bankrupt at this point, and that prominently includes the U.S. government, which has been living off of borrowed capital for many years. And Trump, of course, is central to our current situation. I don't see him as I see him as a symptom more than anything else. When things get really unsteady, a man on a white horse tends to ride up and say, I can kiss it all and make it better. And if you look at all the promises that he made before he was elected, he was promising to cure everything. Audit the Fed, he said, end the war in the Ukraine, like tomorrow morning. And it's understandable because there are so many things wrong with the U.S. Somebody needs to straighten these things out. But the U.S. government is a giant thing with a life of its own at this point. And it looked like he was going to make some changes with DOGE. Remember DOGE, which was going to eliminate waste and fraud?
The coin.
That all went away. That vanished. So it's kind of business as usual in Washington. Even the one thing that looked like it was reasonably doable, getting rid of illegal immigrants in the U.S. Well, that's been screwed up so badly that I'm not even sure that will continue at this point. So, well, we go back to my prediction of chaos. Anyway, whatever problems Donald Trump has now are going to be amplified come November. What I think what's likely, for lots of reasons, is that the Democrats are going to sweep the elections, and they will then use their conquest of the Senate and the House to impeach Donald Trump. So, but he's become, listen, Donald has, power has gone to his head. I mean, Lord Acton was quite correct when he said power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And with the things that Trump has done around the world, he really is standing like a colossus that's ruling the world. The power has gone to his head. He thinks he's a Roman emperor. But if we go back to Rome, what the United States needs at this point is a Cincinnatus who, he's a 5th century BC figure that in a time of crisis took the reins for 6 months and gave them up and went back to his regular business. I'm afraid that Trump is turning into something more like a Caligula, not a Cincinnatus. So, it's not good. And the people around him all appear to be sycophants, afraid to argue with them or present a thought that might be at odds with what Trump wants to do. And the problem with Trump is he understands nothing about economics and really thinks that he knows better than anybody else. He's a real estate speculator, did very well at that, but he's way above his head. But the United States needed somebody to shake things up. I'm just afraid that the way he shakes things up will result in the lefties getting back into office, and they're potentially even more dangerous than he is.
So I do want to talk about the impeachment as well as the Democrats gaining power in the election stuff. But, let's go to the Trump thing where I'm having a hard time making sense of the moves he's making. I've never seen a president so audaciously fight so many fronts all at once without clarity on what's going on. There's so many narratives out there. I don't know what's what. The U.S. is pressing on Venezuela, Iran, Greenland, China. The list goes on and on. Is that smart strategy just overreach? Washington playing 4D chess? You seem to think that he's gone mad. Like, what sense do people have in thinking that he's playing 4D chess and he's got it all figured out? I mean, I'm having a hard time.
Maybe it's not 4D chess. Maybe it's 9D chess, whatever that is. look, he's maybe Trump really sees that the U.S. is in trouble and needs somebody to straighten things out and fly right. But his lack of knowledge in so many areas and lack of wisdom means that I don't think he's the man to do it. Well, I guess something's better than nothing. But, you know, he was supposed to be the anti-war president that would bring the troops home. That was one of the things. But he's bombed at least 7 countries at this point. The war in the Ukraine still drags on. And right. Under Trump, scores of billions of dollars went to support the totally corrupt and ineffectual Zelensky regime in the Ukraine. I mean, he extracted Maduro from Venezuela. All right, that kind of put the fear of God into the people in Maduro's administration and a bunch of other, you know, similar regimes like Nicaragua and, well, Cuba, which will collapse now. So I'm looking at the bright side of these things. But listen, the woman who's in charge of Venezuela now is cut from exactly the same cloth as Maduro. And all she has to do is kind of wait for the clock to run out on Trump. And then she can be the dictator of Venezuela. And probably the same can happen with, who's that guy in Nicaragua? Anyway, it doesn't matter. These people come and go. We can't even, nobody knows the name of the guy that's running Cuba at this point, frankly. But that is the good news. They'll probably be gone while Trump's still in office, so he can rack up a win in that department. But is he going to attack Iran? That would impress me as being incredibly stupid, because, first of all, Iran is zero threat to the U.S. So why are we messing around with a country on the other side of the world that's done nothing to the U.S. and can do nothing? I guess it's because Israel is our best friend. Maybe we ought to make them the 51st stake.
So is the military being sent over to Iran more to do with Israel? Is it related at all with Russia? You know, sizing them up, you know, putting them in place, or challenging them, or their military. And then along with that, I'm curious as to know what your thoughts are on the deal between U.S. and India, where not only tariffs are reduced, but also, you know, the deal being that they don't buy Russian oil anymore. Is the larger game here linked with Russia in any way?
Well, you can say what you want about Putin, but the fact is that when the Soviet Union collapsed and turned into 15 separate countries, there was no significant dust-up, no global thermonuclear war that worked, that came out of the old Soviet Union collapsing. And since it collapsed, Russia's always had an authoritarian-type regime. Putin's, I'm sure, not a nice guy, but he's better educated and more thoughtful than any other leader in Europe or North America at this point. And frankly, Russia, thinking in terms of statecraft, Machiavellian, Kissingerian type thoughts, the Russians were provoked into that invasion of the Ukraine. So all things considered, Putin gets a very bad rap. Once again, listen, all of the people that run governments are basically sociopaths, even psychopaths, but Putin's the best of the bunch. So why is Trump continuing to antagonize Russia and try to hurt the place? Because if Putin falls, you don't know who's going to take over, and maybe this is their intention, Russia itself will break up into a half a dozen different countries, because Russia really is a domestic empire itself, just as the Soviet Union was a larger empire. Russia itself is an empire. I mean, maybe that's what the chess masters that go to Davos, although Davos is probably a dead duck now, thank God. Maybe that's what they want to see. But it's a very dangerous situation. Look, I think that most of the world's countries at this point are going to break up. I mean, the Soviet Union was first. We got 15 new countries from that. Then Yugoslavia broke up. We got 6 new countries out of that. Czechoslovakia broke up. 2 new countries out of 1. But most of the countries in Africa are totally artificial constructs. Africa's fated to be a war zone for the rest of the century. And most of those countries, which are totally artificial, are going to break up. Same is true of the Middle East. All of those countries were constructed in the boardrooms of Europe that have no integrity from the point of view of ethnicity or religion or anything. So this is an insoluble problem. The best thing the United States can do is mind its own business so we don't bankrupt ourselves in the process of making more enemies by sticking our nose in other people's business. That's not what Trump is doing, though. So I don't know if that's – it's hard to hard to answer your question simply, but that's
– Yeah. So in terms of not making friends, we're seeming – and calling Israel our 51st state or best friend. I mean, I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know what benefit U.S. is getting from that.
Zero benefit.
And then meanwhile, we're seemingly pissing off everybody else, our allies, and you know, Canada and UK being, you know, something to come to mind. Europe doesn't like us anymore. NATO is, what is NATO anyway?
Look, the EU is going to disappear.
Right.
It's going to dry up and blow away because it's dysfunctional. Do you know that there are 80,000 bureaucrats working in and around Brussels, gumming up the works of Europe? So no, the EU is a dead duck, and so is NATO. NATO is going away as well. And as far as the UK and Canada are concerned, Carney and Starmer are both active sociopaths. I mean, Canada, listen, Canada is going to break up as well, frankly. Hopefully starting with Alberta.
Tell me more, Doug.
Well, it's well known in some circles that the U.S. government has people talking to people, certain people in Alberta, that would like to see it get out of Canada. And why shouldn't it? Because Alberta Ontario is where most of the manufacturing in Canada happens. But Alberta has been a milk cow for the rest of Canada. Its exports of wheat and corn and soybeans and energy products, uranium and oil. I mean, it's actually supporting the rest of Canada. And of course, Quebec should have broken off from Canada many years ago. But since Quebec is like a net welfare recipient, of course they want to stay in Canada. I mean, it's fun being a welfare brat. So, Canada's going to break up. I just hope that Alberta becomes independent and doesn't join the U.S.
What motivation is, so you see Alberta becoming its own state?
Yeah, an independent country. Yes, yeah, they'll be joined by Saskatchewan next to them, which is in many ways similar to Alberta. Exactly.
So when you say it's well known in many circles, can you expand on that? Who knows about this? I mean, this is...
Well, it's not... I'm not sure this has hit the mainstream press, but rumors circulate that people in the U.S. government are talking to people that are leading the independence movement in Alberta to grease the path and make it easy. And, you know, since Trump is such a prickly guy, he was insulted by Carney's, the Prime Minister of Canada. He was insulted by his speech at Davos. And I think he takes these things personally. I mean, he sees these people as being personal friends or personal enemies. So, who knows what's going on in his mind? Because, like I said, he's thinking like a Roman emperor at this point.
Well, even Rome needed friends, and I feel like we've lost a lot of friends recently, if we can call them that. Who's our allies? I don't know. If Israel's our only ally, I don't know what benefit that is, with all respect to Israel. So with Canada, our neighbors,
I wish the Israelis well, and I wish the Palestinians.
Yeah, so do I.
Not our problem. Let them sort it out with them between themselves.
So with all that going on, and Canada saying, you know, we're looking to, you know, have better ties with China, and we're looking at a new world order, and U.S. seemingly having disregard for its allies, you know, and you're saying that we're looking at more states. Are we looking at the map of the world being redrawn? I mean, you mentioned Alberta, but like, where are pieces being reshuffled right now?
Well, like I said, in the long run, I think Russia is going to have secession movements. I think we're going to see something that's like secession movements in the U.S. Why do I say that? Because a young Chicano male in Southern California is going to resent paying a significant amount of his salary to pay the medical bills of some old white broad in Maine. He's got nothing in common with her. They shouldn't be part of the same country, quite frankly. So, excuse me, a visit from the local dog. But
you're good, huh? I'm not laughing at the dog. I'm laughing that you speak your mind, Doug. Keep going.
So, I mean, look, this is true of many countries around the world. Brazil, biggest country by far in South America, it should and is likely will eventually break up into at least two, three countries. I mean, the northeast of Brazil is ethnically, economically, in every way, very different from the south of Brazil. They really don't belong together. Chile, if you go to the far south, the Indians are very restive. They're unhappy. I mean, they don't want to be part of Chile, frankly. So there's a lot of these things going on in different places. Bolivia should be at least two different countries. One, where most of the Europeans live, and the other in the highlands, basically, where the native Indians live. And they don't get along as well as we might hope. Guyana, okay, which has been in the news. I've been to all these countries numerous times, frankly. I've been to, how many countries have I been to? I've lived in 10 or 11 and been to 155 or 160. But Guyana, you've got the black people that live there and the East Indian people that live there. They don't get along. I mean, they're totally different cultures, totally different, at each other's throats. You don't hear much about Suriname. Suriname is even more complicated than Guyana is. But of course, Guyana's got all this recent oil wealth, which they're going to be scrambling for to see who can steal the most. I mean, we can take most of the countries in the world and see that if the world order breaks down, things can happen in different places that are currently compressed or suppressed, if you wish.
So I want to go back to what you're saying about the election, impeachment, and referencing also what you said last time we spoke about a civil war where our congressmen can't even stay in the same room together. How likely is it that we're going, I mean, how much trust can we put into the election, and how likely do you find the impeachment going to actually happen? Do you see this? You said November.
Right. Well, at this point, I'm not certain we can have really honest elections in the U.S. I mean, Trump says a lot of things about this, and there's a lot of truth to what Trump says about the dishonesty of the election process in some states. I mean, I don't know. I haven't had boots on the ground where this has happened. But it's possible that whoever wins the elections in November, whoever loses is going to be unhappy. It's going to be whoever cheats best, probably, at this point. Because, you know, at this point, it's not just congressmen can't be in the same room with each other if they're from opposite parties, but family members can't even have Thanksgiving dinner together if one is red and one is blue. I mean, not really. They can all they can talk about is the weather and the state of the roads. So,
well, Doug, it's I do talk with mining companies, and you know, I do both micro and macro conversations. I joke with my friend Andy that, you know, the difference is that micro companies or micro conversations, I want to buy stock. It makes me want to buy gold and gold stock. And then when I talk with macro people like Doug Casey, in particular, I dropped your name. They make you want to buy gold, whiskey, and bullets. So, with you saying the way how you really feel and not holding back, I appreciate. But you know, in terms of what people can do in the coming chaos, love your unfiltered Doug Casey take on what people can do to prepare for what might be ahead.
Oh, you can add tobacco to that because
tobacco, yeah.
Yeah, tobacco is being taxed out of existence. But I'm all for tobacco. I'm an inveterate cigar smoker. So stock up now. It'll be as valuable as the whiskey and the bullets. But as far as the junior markets are concerned, gold and silver and copper and uranium and all the rest of the elemental mining stocks, as you know, I've been bullish on these for many years. My portfolio has been grossly overweighted towards all these things, and it's been just really sweet for the last couple of years, especially for the last year. So what's going to happen next? My guess is this, is that gold is at a new equilibrium level and will edge higher. And as earnings start being reported from producers, gold, silver, all the rest of them, over the months to come, a lot of people are going to wake up to the fact that these stocks are really cheap and could go higher. And I'd like to think that we'll eventually, right now, look, nobody, I don't know how we wanted to find nobody, has been buying mining stocks. Lots of reasons. I mean, it's a crappy 19th century choo-choo train business. Young people don't want to play in the mud with big yellow trucks. It's all about raping Mother Earth. And, you know, that's kind of anathema. Nobody wants to do that. And if you have a board, you've got to have a woman who may or may not be qualified. And you've got to have a black person who may or may not be qualified. And you're supposed to, you know, well, DIE is pretty dead, but ESG is still there. So, and assuming you can get permitted to build a mine, which takes forever. It's not forever. If you do that, then you become a target for NGOs and native groups. And it's a horrible business. But the earnings of producers and late-term developers, it's going to be obvious they're making a lot of money. And this is one of the good things about Trump. He'd like to see more production. You know, that's something he'd like to see. So I remain bullish on these mining stocks, frankly.
Just stay away from the choo-choo train ones. Doug, yeah. You've written a book or several books. I've been a fan of several. Last time we spoke about the preparation. For those who missed it, could you tell us a little bit more about what that's all about?
Well, I've got to give a commercial for this thing, Steve. The big problem we have, I have, every author has a copy of this book at hand. And the big problem we have in the West, and this is a civilizational problem that we're talking about, is that young people are lost. And one of the big corrupting influences is the educational system, particularly college. You go to college for 4 years, you learn things which are wrongheaded or useless, and in many cases, actively destructive, and you wind up with a giant debt load and no knowledge at the end of it. So this book, The Preparation, tells young men exactly why they shouldn't go to college, because it's deleterious in all ways, and what they should do instead. Over, we divide the 4 years into 16 quarters, and by the time you finish our program, you'll not only know more than you'd know academically, but you'll have transformed yourself into a Renaissance man so that you can land on your feet no matter what happens to the economy, whether it's a boom or a real bust, which I think is what we're heading into. So that's that. And I have a daily blog. It's free, called internationalman.com. Everybody should subscribe to that. It's pretty good. And Matt Smith.
What was the blog about, Doug?
Well, we cover everything in that blog. I write a weekly article. David Stockman, who became famous in the Reagan administration, writes a daily article. Chris McIntosh, one of my very favorite fund managers, writes an article every week. So lots of good articles on internationalman.com. And we talk a lot about the mining and resource businesses there, too. And Matt Smith and I do usually a biweekly broadcast on YouTube called Doug Casey's Take. So that covers it. And we have a newsletter, too. I started up Crisis Investing, my old newsletter again, because people want specifics on these mining stocks. And that's what crisisinvesting.com does, is digs into the individual companies. So all that.
So crisisinvesting.com, internationalman.com. The name of the YouTube channel again is what? Doug Casey's Take.
Yeah.
And the book Preparation. So we will put that in the notes for the show. Doug, I do have one important question before I let you go. What's your favorite cigar?
Well, everybody loves Cohibas in general. I like the Cohiba Esplendido, which is, I think, the best Cohiba. And if you can find them, Dan can afford them. The Trinidad is like a super high-quality Cohiba. And for normal occasions, a good Romeo and Julieta is just fine. And I am a fan of Cuban cigars. I'm old school that way.
Are you a torpedo cut kind of guy, or how do you like it?
I used to be a Panatella kind of guy, and yeah. I still like them, but now I'll usually go for something that's 6 to 7 inches and around a 45 ring size. Just kind of a typical cigar. Suits me fine.
Doug Casey's Take, everybody. Doug, thank you so much for your time. I enjoyed every single time I listened to you, and thanks for coming back on with me. For everyone listening, Doug Casey here. I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people smarter than me. Everybody stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined, and in this case, stay safe. Bye for now.